two things are in tension. Anyway, we're live. Welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air. This is episode 57. We're still rolling with this. Every week we're bringing it to you. And we've got a super exciting show for you today. Actually, we've almost got a record-breaking registration count. Something like 538 people are going to be watching this live stream. That's an incredible number for a one-hour webinar. And I do think it is because not only are Adam and I charismatic co-hosts, but in fact, we've got an amazing guest with us later on. A wonderful speaker and a great thinker doer in our industry, a chap called John Vlastelica, who I'm delighted to bring on very shortly. Anyway, before we kick off, just a bit of housekeeping on the audio visual side. I'm always lacking confidence in this because we are multi-streaming across LinkedIn, Periscope, and Facebook Live. So what I need everyone to do is simply say hi on the chat stream or on the comments. Just let me know whether I can hear you, whether you can hear me, because at this moment, I can't hear you. Quite important that you can basically understand, hear what I'm saying, and see everything. So just say hi. I can see everything's going well on Crowdcast there, which is great. Can I see that on LinkedIn as well, please? If you're on LinkedIn live, just comment to say, yes, you can hear me. And for the one person on Periscope, please retweet, do something like that, let me know. And I think we've got 100 people on Facebook Live as well, maybe 200 people. Go and say hello to me there. Can you hear me? Yes, you can. Get on with the show, Hung. I totally agree. Okay, a bit more housekeeping. Episode 57 is sponsored by our friends at PASS. PASS Technologies. They're an awesome business working in EMEA and in APAC. They are referencing checking made simple. These days, super relevant in the post-COVID world where everyone's distributed. We need to find validation in a different way. I think reference checking is probably one of the few HR recruitment tech industries where you can kind of put some money on it and say they're going to do very well. Anyway, PASS have also got an offer on. They're going to give their product out for free for 30 days. So I'm going to share the link with you guys. Go and check them out there. Totally worth it. If you have no solution right now or you want to upgrade your referencing checking and bulk it up, make it easier, check out PASS Technology. Okay, anyway, as ever, Brain Food Live is co-hosted and co-piloted. This time it's returned to the hot seat. To Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you doing, mate?
I'm very great. And hi to Zara, who's in Scotland. Welcome. So
special welcome to Zara.
You know, I think we can probably put some of these, this additional boost in viewing figures down to our guest. But I haven't been on for about 3 weeks. And I think that's a large, large part in this.
This is the Adam Gordon fan club bouncing back. I don't doubt it. You know, if you're a fan of Adam, please say so. I'm waiting for the avalanche of comments to confirm.
Don't break the internet. The case.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, very quickly, Adam, I hope you're well. You're looking well. A quick one about Brain Food. Did you read it last week? I know you've been kind of absent without leave for a little while on the Brain Food Live, but tell me about the newsletter last week. Did you read it and what was interesting for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I remain one of the top 100 recruiting Brain Food champions and top 100 to 200 level, something
you're
like
number,
that.
You're number two, by the way, because on the Food Hall of Fame, which, by the way, all of you are welcome to sign up to, I'm going to send it, sort of share it in the chat stream here. Basically, we've got a little bit of fun, but now possibly a bit of use because I'm trying to use it to help people get work. But we initially created this beta product to basically score all of the community contributors. And Adam, sadly, is in the top two. So he's sticking his heart to dislodge.
Stop slagging me off now as being formerly a big supporter of the Brain Food.
Yeah, so listen,
let's move on to it. As I posted on Facebook on Sunday, I liked a lot of things on recruiting Brain Food. It was a really great, really great newsletter this week. There was lots of number two, joint equal number two content. Number one, anything that has the words Alan and Bailey next to it is going to be number one for me. So anybody that's got recruiting Brain Food from Sunday, if you haven't, look down near the bottom, go and take a look at who's talking. The second one that's listed there is Alan Bailey on the 9 to Thrive HR podcast, talking about talent pipelining and how their vision for how you build pipelines and how you build communities and how you build trust and respect and fans, etc., with the people you might want to hire in the future. There are other companies doing similar great things, but there's nobody being as open about how they're doing it and really sharing. Anything from Alan Bailey or Kobe Schneider is well worth taking a look at.
Yeah,
that's my first one.
That's totally cool.
Tyler Weeks. Anything from Tyler Weeks as well.
I've just shared that sort of interview. Alan Bailey, by the way, works for Intel Corporation, and I agree wholly with you, Adam. She and Kobe and the entire team there at Intel seem to have a very modern, even revolutionary attitude to talent pipelining. I recommend you follow Alan as well, which I've just shared her LinkedIn there. Make sure she's one of the people on your radar screen, basically. So absolutely. Okay, what else, man?
Well, like one that you really liked was this article about the golden age for talent is over from Gons Sanchez.
That's right. And, yes.
You know, I'm interested. Could you just give us a little bit more about what it was you liked about this article, and then I'll give you my counterpoint about it.
Yeah, you know what? I liked it. When I say I liked it, it doesn't mean I always agree with stuff. It means that I think that it's worth the debate. So I think your argument, I am anticipating, I'm kind of going to align a little bit with it. But I liked it in the sense that it just posed the general issue, which a lot of us are seeing at the front line, which maybe is the case that the candidate behavior has changed. The flip has been extraordinary. It's been a matter of months where there's been this, you know, candidate shortage, people not speaking to recruiters, all of this issue, massive problem in attracting applicants. Now, of course, we've got a complete reduction of the jobs. We've got candidates kind of more desperate for work, great time to interact with people. There has been a flip. So I think I agree with the general premise of what Gons was saying. But, you know, I think the argument itself didn't seem entirely complete, actually. I was looking for a part two from him. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he'll be able to produce that. But I'll be interested to know your thoughts on it.
Well, there are no data scientists walking around with the sandwich board saying, I'm available for work. There are no solutions architects or DevOps or software engineers or physicists walking around, you know, desperately looking for jobs. So I think that the golden age for talent is not over. The golden age for talent is probably going to intensify, if anything. And, you know, I do hear probably people outside recruitment more so, but, you know, a lot of my friends are saying to me, God, you must be in big problems. You sell recruitment software. I mean, nobody's recruiting. And I'm like, believe me, all the biotech companies and software engineering companies and fintechs and medtechs and health techs and rec techs, they're all hiring because they're all, you know, they're all building products. So there are not going to be. What it should do is it should accelerate a lot of people into changing the kind of work that they do and understanding how to make themselves a bit more indispensable. So,
yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's actually a topic of Brain Food Lab. We need to do, how do recruiters become indispensable in this era? Because I think there is a shift. I totally get what you're saying. There's certain industries that will certainly be growing as a result of COVID-19. You can imagine what they are. Cybersecurity with the distribution of the workforce is going to spike up. Healthcare tech, of course. You know, biotech, of course. All of those things will be there. But overall, I do think that there will be a reduction of the amount of hours required to do the work that we wanted to do, simply because a lot of the things that we did do will kind of certainly slow down. You look at leisure, travel, entertainment, how much is actually based on consumer level stuff, consumer level activity. Those jobs are either going to be replaced, sort of will go on, and I don't think they'll be replaced by human workers. You know, you think about a restaurant, you know, are we going to be that confident in having someone a human being service food anymore? Maybe I want a sanitized robot to do that with UV lighting and, like, you know, a completely sanitized tray. So I think we're going to see a big change. Gons, I thought, had a broad brush approach to it. I think you're right to say it requires a bit more nuance on that. And there will be pockets that will be relevant. By the way, I'm about to share in Sunday, there'll be a newsletter again, of course. There's a slide deck by a lady called Steph Smith, who is an analyst for The Hustle. And she's got a really interesting slide in that deck, which basically describes the categories where VCs are actually investing more than they did before. And that will give us recruiters a bit of a clue as to where the distribution of jobs might be in future. So definitely make sure you look out for that. Adam.
Just quickly add to that in terms of like jobs for recruiters. If you're a recruiter and you pride yourself on, you know, having a specialist skill set in sourcing or selection or sales, that ain't the future. You need to learn some different aspects of recruitment that are going to add value beyond what technology is currently, like right now, taking over.
Right. Well, we'll definitely have a chat with John on that when he comes in, because I think that's something that we definitely want to explore with him. Okay, one more before we bring John on, because he is person people want to speak to.
It's two in one. There was two articles about video chats and about working in this way that we're talking right now. I think by the end of this hour, I'll have been 7 hours online today on videos. I've definitely done 7 hours yesterday and the day before and the day before that. So it's just meeting after meeting after meeting. And, you know, I look at people going, oh, well, if you're spending 4 hours or more online, you're going to burn out and whatever. And I'm thinking, yeah, this happens every time there's a change in the way we work. People go, oh, you shouldn't be on the telephone for this amount of time. You shouldn't be online for this amount of time. You shouldn't be doing whatever for this amount of time. And I kind of think, look, at some point, you got to just get on with your job and work hard. So I think there's a lot of excuses around. That said, I do agree that it's wearing. But I mean, that's just life, isn't it? You got to work hard.
Life's tough. Suck it up. That's Adam Gordon's point. Fair enough. I've just shared those two articles where I think Adam was referring to, by the way. One of the psychology of why video chat is exhausting, and I kind of have some sympathy with the author there, although I did critique it because I thought that she was kind of like harking back to, oh, why don't we just use the phone? And I'm thinking, actually, the phone is more stressful for some people, so I don't see why a change of medium is any better. And the other one is actually to say, you know what, if you're doing more than 4 hours on a Zoom call, if you're doing more than 4 hours on different calls, you might be doing overly too many meetings. I have some sympathy for that because there's too many meetings anyway. So again, there's another post that's happening in Brain Food this Sunday. It might be this Sunday after, actually, which will be how to manage a remote working day without any meetings. And I think a lot of us kind of watching this show now will be thinking, yeah, I need to know how to do that, because there are things popping into our diaries. And after you've had the call, you think, what was the point in that? That was 30 minutes of time spent that was burnt, but it's generated possibly some additional bits of work that I don't really want to do. So
if you automatically, I've said this to several people who I can see them, like I can actually see them burning out. And I'm saying to them, like, tell me what's in your diary right now. Tell me what's in your diary this afternoon. And they've got an hour for this meeting, 45 minutes for that meeting, 30 minutes for that meeting. I'm going, see that hour, make that 30 minutes. That 45 minutes, make it 30. That 30 minutes, make it 15 or 20 minutes. And, you know, there's no reason for hour meetings at all. There's no reason for any 60-minute meetings.
I totally agree. I mean, if you have any meeting with 60 minutes for one person, it's usually a problem, or it's there to solve a problem. So I totally get it. If you need to resolve an issue, that's required to have that time, and maybe even more if so. But usually it's about catch up. It's about transactions. It's about whatever. Anything that's longer than that can be handled in documentation. So we do have to learn about all of those things. Anyway, that's about it. Let's bring on the man, John Blastelica. For people who don't know John, by the way, you should totally follow this guy. Oh, John's actually on twice here, but I think he's got this type of thing. He runs his own recruiting business called Recruiting Toolbox. He is what I call a think doer in this industry. So not only is he's a person that commentates on the world of work, but he's actively still on the case supporting and advising businesses. And there he is, John Blastelica. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Great. Great to see you, man.
Happy to be here.
Great. Have you met Adam, by the way, Adam Gordon?
We haven't met, I don't think, but I...
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, yeah. I've read his stuff. Smart dude.
He's not that smart. I mean, I think he gets someone to ghostwrite all of his comments, to be honest with you. But yeah, we kind of, he needs the credibility to present. So I'll leave him with that.
Nice.
Anyway, John, for the few people who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself and what it is you do?
Sure. I lead a consulting and training firm called Recruiting Toolbox, and we do projects with usually fairly large talent acquisition teams. Hiring manager training, recruiter training, a lot of consulting projects to kind of build better strategy process, and a ton of work around defining what good looks like for companies. So trying to get people aligned on their hiring bar. Been doing that about 15 years. And prior to that, I was the head of tech recruiting at Amazon and head of recruiting at Expedia. So my team, which is small, are all former practitioners. So we have kind of a real world kind of orientation to talent acquisition as opposed to a more academic kind of orientation.
Yeah, well, this is part of the reason why, you know, I love hearing you speak, and I'm honored to have you on the show because I call you a thinker doer. You know, yeah. there's a lot of, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people that do thinking. I'm a thinker these days. I don't do much doing. But at some point, you divorce yourself from the practicalities because you've been away from it for so long, whereas you're still in it and you're still face to face with the problem and getting in there. So this is why, you know, it's great to have you on as a guest and why we've got so many people watching the show right now. John, topic of the when we first sort of interacted and thought about getting you on the show, the first thing we wanted to talk about was the central on this topic, which was what are top TA teams doing right now? Because a lot of the businesses that you supported were these hyper growth businesses. You know, hey, John, our problems were we need to hire 10,000 software engineers like in 3 months. How do we do that? Okay, well, hyper growth isn't happening right now. There's other things that we need to do. What are those organizations doing right now? So that's the general topic of right. conversation. But let me just throw it over to you as the headline. I mean, can you give us a one-liner on what these businesses are doing right now?
You know, it really depends, right? I mean, there's some businesses, some sectors that are doing quite well right now. So we have clients in gaming, for example, and healthcare and biotech, technology that I wouldn't, you know, some of them are actually growing, hiring more than before, yeah. but most are still hiring, probably not at the same rate. I think one of the things that business leaders are trying to think through is, you know, how long is this going to last and what's the recovery look like? And, you know, the whole kind of, is it a V-shaped thing where it goes down fast and comes up fast? I think we've kind of resolved that that's not happening, right? This is not like suddenly starting next week, you know, we're back in it and it's crazy bonkers again. So I think one of the things that TA teams are doing is looking to their business to give them some guidance. And I would argue that we have really been in the virus phase the last 2 months of thinking. So it's how do we transition to work from home? How do we think about, you know, everything virtual? Let's pause and figure out what's going on. I think we're now entering the recession phase of this. And a recession phase is very different than a virus phase in my mind. And so TA teams are now, I think this week, next week, this month, going to be thinking more deeply about are we right sized to deliver what the business actually needs from us? I think when the business thinks this is temporary, you know what? It is hard. I had a conversation in Silicon Valley with TA leaders who said it was harder to find a great senior technical recruiter than a senior engineer. So that is not going to be the case going forward. There's going to be a lot more, you know, recruiters that are available. But I think business leaders are now they're recognizing, hey, if this is short term, keep your recruiters because it is shit hard to go find a bunch of great recruiters and ramp this back up again. As they think about this in a longer term kind of lens, you know, let's say a year, I think they're going to recognize we need to make sure that we have the right size recruiting team for the kind of hiring needs we have. And CFOs are not going to fund a recruiting team to just go do, you know, special projects for a year. The funding realities, you know, you're just not going to be able to afford it. But even the optics, you know, if you're laying off in one area and you're keeping all of your recruiters employed, that is a very real concern from an optics standpoint. So I think there's going to be what are teams doing now? I think teams have been doing kind of temporary. Let's see where this goes. Let's do special projects. I think we're now entering this kind of new phase where the reality of the recession is going to hit. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And actually, it's in so many respects ominous, but it's always better to be real than it is to give false optimism. What you're saying is, you know what, the reality of it is recruiters need jobs to fulfill. If those job, if the job volume is significantly low over a period of time, that means a lot more that we're going to contract these functions rather than have them, as you say, pursue special projects, which I believe a lot of them have been doing right now. So, you know, database cleansing, employer branding stuff, and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things, you know, we have clients that have been doing that kind of work for sure that are saying, let's take advantage of this opportunity. I mean, we have clients that are still hiring us, despite the fact that my business, the kind of work I do, has the potential to just completely fall off a cliff during a recession. There's still companies that are saying, hey, it's a little slower. We have time to focus on more strategic things. I'm happy to share what some of those things are from not just our clients, but TA leaders they talk to. But let's take advantage of this little bit of pause and let's kind of retool, which is kind of the focus of this discussion, I know. But others are just like, you know, a month ago, they're like, we shut all of our retail stores. We're cutting back corporate by 20%. We're doing layoffs. We're cutting contract recruiters first, then regular recruiters. The RPOs are gone. The vendors, the spend, we're trying to renegotiate big contracts we signed in, you know, January, February at the start of the year, because we don't need all of these LinkedIn licenses, or we don't need all of these job board licenses, or whatever it is. You know, there's the panic that just kind of came out of nowhere and just stopped everything. So despite the fact that some industries are growing and taking advantage of the downturn, some are just being forced to, you know, just completely shrink, which means most strategic work just goes by the wayside. The few folks that are remaining relative to the bigger teams are focused on backfills and strategic roles and, you know, critical hiring.
John, can I ask, you talked about the different phases, and you talked about, you know, we're in the virus phase and coming is the recession phase. But do you think that companies that have made those changes already, they've right-sized or downsized their business, and they've you know, made cuts and done different things to lower their cash burn, do you think they've done that on the basis of considering the virus phase, or considering actually the next 18 months?
I think it's more based on the recession phase. So, for example, yeah, we have a client that brought in, you know, big consulting firm. They looked at their business, they looked at their cash burn rate, they looked at their hiring plans, their expansion plans, and they just had to scale that back. It is more based on that. But it's interesting because, you know, everyone is trying to figure out, you know, week to week, I think we're all so frustrated because the information coming out from our governments, from the media around what this is, what this isn't, what's safe, what's not okay. You're hearing, you know, in the United States, for example, you know, Texas is back open again, right? And so, you know, I think you can see in the stock market the confusion around what's actually happening here. Like, the stock market tanked, but then it's been just kind of in this weird kind of mode where I think everyone's trying to figure out, how should we be thinking about this? And so I think business leaders are probably doing a little better job than you know, just as a talent acquisition leader, I might be able to do, because my view on the matter is important, but not nearly as important as what the business decides to do. You know, if the business isn't going to be hiring, that's going to force me to kind of change my role. I don't get to say, hey, here's how I see the economy, and I recommend we do X. That's great if you have that kind of relationship with your CEO or CFO, but they're going to make it based on financials, not on just kind of, hey, it's really hard to rehire recruiters 6 months from now. They're going to go, yeah, well, but we're not going to be here 6 months from now if we don't cut back on costs and we don't need all this hiring, you know. And so I'm not a pessimist. I mean, I'm very optimistic about our profession. I think there's tons of stuff we can and should be doing now. I just think we haven't fully, I don't think the market, I don't think our thinking is fully kind of baked in the reality of the recession phase. I think that's just starting to happen right now.
So it's interesting what you said, because earlier on today, I was in a WhatsApp chat with a couple of friends of mine, and they were talking about some people that had been, you know, TA leaders that have been made redundant. And they're like, these people clearly weren't able to demonstrate their value and the value of TA to the business. And my response was, nah, there's decisions that will get made way above whatever value they can try and demonstrate to the business that will not be impacted by anything they could possibly do or say. So I just don't really agree with that.
Yeah, it's not a performance thing. It's very important for us to recognize that. Yes, TA is important, but it's very much aligned to growing business. And if the business C-level understands that it's going to retrench and actually reduce, contract, etc., it's natural that we're one of the functions that's going to fall back on. You actually mentioned a very important point about the optics of it. I mean, there is an employer branding angle to this, right? I mean, if you're going to start letting people go and you conspicuously retain a growth orientated function, there's going to be question marks there. So I totally understand that. And people who are kind of furloughed, being let go right now, it's important that those people recognize that this is business reality rather than anything to do with performance, 100%. John, you did mention...
Hold on. I don't know that that's strictly the case, because there are companies that are using this as a great opportunity to remove problem teams and to cut loose problem businesses and problem individuals. So it's not exclusively.
It was a generalization. I mean, the smart companies will use this as a reason, and of course this would make sense to do that. You know, you're going to retain the best people in the business. You're going to let the folks go that you've deemed to be problematic. I get that.
But I want to comment. I guess one of the things that I would say every one of us should be thinking about right now is, how do you make yourself more valuable? Just period. I mean, it's always good to be thinking about that for your career, but especially right now, because as a TA leader, both at Amazon and Expedia, I had the not so fun job of sitting down and deciding when we were going to scale back, who was going to be let go. And it's really horrible, because some of these people you may have only hired in the last year. They turned down another offer to join your team, and now you have to make the decision, who do we let go? And it's really interesting to me the kind of I talk a lot about becoming a talent advisor, right? And I do training around that and presentations around that. And a lot of that is around the value we're delivering, the kind of perceived value and the real value we deliver to the business, to the hiring manager community, not just on special projects within HR. And one of the things that I get concerned about in those conversations, a lot of what's talked about as criteria for who stays, who goes, is you look at the business feedback on the recruiter. You look at the business feedback on the TA leader. You're really asking yourself, is this person valuable to our business? And I don't mean the person, like they're a good person or a bad person. I mean, look at the quality of what they create. Look at the value that they're adding. And so that's one of the things I think is important, pre-recession, during recessions, anytime, but especially right now, is to make sure that you're attaching yourself as much as possible to things that show real ROI on the business side, not just, I worked on, as Adam said, I was in, 18 bullshit meetings, 1 hour each, where we, gave updates and tried to pull together some high level strategy on some random thing that the business doesn't even care about. That's just about improving our internal function and not delivering more value to the business. And I would be very nervous, I think, if I worked in HR or TA and I'd been working on things that just don't show measurable ROI on the business side, because that's the areas you're going to, it makes sense, it's rational, but that's the areas that I think are at greatest risk for not surviving the recession at that particular company, right?
Yeah, and in fact, one of that was actually one of the themes of your talk you gave, I think, at RecFest, was how do you kind of present, how do you become the best friend of the hiring manager? How do you become the best friend of the business coming from the TA function? What are the things that you need to be doing? And you had some great examples to show or tell people how to do that. So I wonder whether you can share some of your thoughts with us on this, because there's going to be a bunch of people there that I'm sure would be very interested to hear what you have to say on that, John.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. I would rather tell you, the things that I'm seeing our clients do right now that I think are really valuable. One of the things that I hear a lot about, of course, in the United States and in parts of Europe and Asia is just around diversity. I think organizations, before, during, and after recession, I think the world has changed and companies are much more attuned to the need to bring diverse talent into the organization. And so there is way more pull from the business than I've ever seen in my 20 plus years in talent acquisition for more diversity. So I would say, thinking about how you are engaging the business around kind of D&I as a recruiter, and thinking about kind of going after talent that you haven't seen before, I think that's going to be critical. I do think that some, if the reason people have been focused on D&I is that it's been kind of perceived as an HR initiative, not a business pull, kind of not a business need, I think you're going to see a major pullback and a focus on that. It's got to be pull from the business. But if your business is asking for it, that's a great way to kind of generate more ROI. And specific things you can do is to help challenge business leaders to kind of widen the aperture on their candidate profiles. So, for example, I have a friend who's the head of TA for an organization, has about 180 recruiters. And one of the things that they've been doing is they've been working really hard to push the business to relax degree requirements. Do you really need a bachelor's degree or a master's degree to do this job successfully? And not as a way to kind of lower the bar, but as a way to kind of widen the aperture and kind of think about diversity, kind of we can kind of move this very narrow view. We can kind of make it a little more horizontal and think about talent that comes from different industries or different profiles. So I think that's an example. We see a lot of organizations right now spending time trying to pipeline. And I have very mixed feelings about this notion of pipelining. And especially when I hear people talk about like, now's a great time to pipeline, because I find that most CFOs, most HR leaders will not fund proactive work in a recession. And pipelining by its very nature can be viewed as proactive, nice to have, not must have. I don't mean the kind of always be recruiting for those kind of evergreen jobs we're always looking for. I mean the stuff that truly is perceived as proactive. I mean, it was crazy hard to find time to do that when things were good. I can't imagine an organization funding some of that work when things are rough, when things are down.
Should TA not make the case? I mean, do you think it's impossible? Is it a bad idea generally? Is that your position, John? Or do you think it's a tough position to argue?
I think it makes total sense. So, for example, you know, I mentioned gaming and healthcare right now, you know, are doing quite well. And so they have needs. So they are pipelining. They're constantly scouting for talent. And some of them are taking advantage of the fact that, you know, people in parallel industries that maybe aren't gaming, aren't healthcare, but might be able to get people out of hospitality right now into healthcare, might be able to get people out of maybe some parts of tech into gaming right now. They're absolutely going after talent like maybe never before. You know, they're taking advantage of the fact that maybe they can kind of scoop up some talent they couldn't get. And I don't know if you want to bucket that as pipelining or not, but there is work that is, let's start getting talent in, recs or no recs. We have this window of opportunity. Let's take advantage of it. If you're not in industries that are growing, though, I just think it's really hard to justify. I was having an argument/conversation with someone a couple of days ago about this, and they were saying, you know, it's so great. We're going to really focus our team on, you know, pipelining ahead of demand. You know, we've always wanted to do that. And I'm like, I think you're in virus land. You're not in recession land. Like, that thinking makes total sense to me if it's a short-term virus thing. When you get into recession mode, I think you really need to make sure you're attaching your recruiters to very high ROI, short-term ROI projects. Not this is going to pay benefits because we're going to feed our CRM with 2,000 new names a month. I think that kind of work it's going to be really hard to justify. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally get it. I think what you are saying is it's a hard case to argue rather than it being a bad idea, because the person making the decision is going to be the CFO. He's crushed right now because obviously the revenue plan is out the window. He needs to rethink everything and he's just looking to cut. Like right now, he's thinking, where can I cut? And for recruiters, in order to kind of securitize themselves, we need to align to these business critical activities that basically appear on the CFO spreadsheet somewhere.
Yeah, one of my friends is a TA leader. He has this great saying, and he was talking about stepping into a new TA role at a company based out of New York, and he was going around meeting with all the VPs, you know, the heads of business, and hi, I'm the new TA guy. And they're like, so what's your strategy? And his response is always, well, what's your strategy? Like, you know, what is your strategy, business leader? And I'll tell you, because my strategy should feed into your strategy. I should not have an independent TA strategy that is not connected to the business strategy. And that's true pre-virus, pre-recession, during, after, right? That's always true. But it's especially true right now. If you have not lined up your priorities to very clear business priorities, any deck you're putting together right now as a TA professional should start with business priorities and the first page, right? The very first page should be very clear. What are we trying to do? And there may be things that are not just hire more people. There may be things that the business is trying to do the TA can deliver value around. And it might be more around internal mobility. There might be, you know, the business is really trying to do a better job of cataloging the talent we have and redeploying resources. You can be great at that. I had to pivot one of my teams to be good at layoffs, which really sucks to be career coaches and lay off people when your skill set is headhunting, to then kind of move into this internal focus. How do I help our people? That sucks. But if you have skills around that, that's a good way to justify kind of your headcount, your personal headcount. So starting with kind of what are the business goals, page one, page two, here's how we in talent acquisition can support those business goals. What's your strategy? First, then I'll tell you my strategy. My strategy has got to fit into yours.
Just quickly to respond on your point about pipelining. So I do agree that a lot of CFOs are not going to fund TA teams spending their time having conversations with people about their career aspirations for 2021. However, there are quite a lot of businesses I'm seeing where it absolutely aligns with their business strategy, and they are doubling down and trebling down. And it's not because the TA manager is looking for something to do. It's because they've been actively told that, you know, hiring is going to seriously bounce back in Q4 and they need to be prepared for it. So that also links with your point, Hung, which was about, it's going to be, in fact, both of you made this point, which is it's maybe difficult to justify, you know, investing in jobs which are about growth for the future, such as marketing, clearly, but also TA. And, you know, there are businesses who really are actively making that choice, backed by the CFO or maybe even driven by the CFO to do these things. Now, I know it's not all businesses. And it would be cuckoo land to think it is, but there are companies doing that. Absolutely.
100% agree. Yeah, 100% agree with you.
On that note, I mean, obviously, it does depend on the condition of the business, how capitalized, how well capitalized it is, for instance, where it sits in their market and all those types of things. So I think within context, but if we do take the broad sweep, if you like, generally, where the companies are, where the economy is going, that we're all part of, it's very clear that we're going backwards as a global economy, and that's going to have all of these cascade effects, which will generally lead to this type of retrenchment. A couple of questions that are being asked in the ask a question function. By the way, folks, if you're on sort of the chat stream and want to ask a question, please ask it in the ask a question section. Hate to be pedantic about this, but this is the best way for us to manage the questions that come in. We're going to miss it in the chat stream, basically. Okay,
this is like who moved my cheese for me? When was that rule made? This was like in the last, I've been off for 3 weeks, and all of a sudden,
when you were absent without leave, mate. When you're absent without leave, things change. What can I say?
Well, I've got a question from the chat, because I did promise Matt and Danielle that I would ask it, which is so it just goes does go back a little bit, but Matt's asked John, what does it look like to scale down TA while maintaining a solid foundation for future growth? We've kind of talked a bit about that, but is there anything else to add to that?
I think the most important work, I have this saying, you know, misalignment is the root of all evil in recruiting, that, you know, not having people aligned on what good looks like in your organization is such a core foundational, you know, miss at some companies. There's, you know, menus of competencies. Everyone's coming up with their own definition of what diversity means, what good talent means, what senior means, all these things. I would say if you're in scaling down mode and you have the opportunity to take on some kind of high ROI work, a really good example would be to spend time investing in kind of what good looks like. I did some early work with personas, which are quite popular now, marketing personas, to be used in recruiting. But I was doing some work around that, you know, a long time ago, 16 years ago. And one of the things that we did was take advantage of a little bit of a downturn to go out and figure out what are the different flavors or profiles of software engineers that we hire for, so that as we think about our hiring, we kind of convert it more to a university style where you're hiring talent on behalf of the company and not so kind of, you know, myopically focused on what this one hiring manager needs for their particular rec. You kind of elevate from sea level to kind of 10,000 feet or 3,000 meters or whatever, and you're now kind of thinking more like, what are the kinds of talent we need to be attracting, and building your work around that. That also needs to be connected to what the business is asking for, but that's really great foundational work. On top of that work, there's not just kind of EVP, employee value prop, sourcing strategies, referral campaigns, outbound marketing campaigns. There's also interviewing and selection and selling and closing. There's all kinds of work that can sit on top of that foundation. That would be a great example of something that I would say most HR leaders recognize an opportunity there. And I was on the phone yesterday with a big brand company you guys would know. And that kind of work also typically connects in with performance management work because it usually touches like competencies. It might connect with internal mobility work. So it's the kind of work that a lot of other departments outside of talent acquisition might also depend on, which when it feels more integrated like that, it feels like it adds even more value. You get a more multiplier effect on the optics of working on something like that because it seems so connected to other pieces. That would be an example of something that I would say would be a really smart move to focus on if you have limited capacity.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot again here, John, because this is the sort of, I mean, it seems just looking at the Q&As, this is a repeat question. There's a lot of recruiters here that are looking for this. So can you suggest projects to keep a recruiter kind of busy and making sure they are attached to this high ROI type of activity and not distracted by things that ultimately might not satisfy the needs of the business. You've already suggested a few things. Is there anything else that you could add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the world has changed in the sense, and this is from virus and recession, we will be doing virtual interviewing now for quite a while. We'll probably be doing virtual onboarding now for quite a while. We'll probably be way more open to work from home for quite a while. And so I think one of the high value add things a recruiter can do and should do is really become an expert in virtual interviewing, become an expert in interviewing, period. I would argue most recruiters, most of our profession, our expertise is much more top of funnel and bottom of funnel. The middle of funnel is an area where we tend to just kind of, we pre-screen a candidate, throw it to the hiring manager, and then the hiring manager tells us, decline this person, hire this person. We're not as involved in the interview process in most corporate TA functions. I would say get way more invested in what's happening in the middle of the funnel and spend more time thinking about what kind of training and capability building do I need to do with the hiring manager community. My business, which again, we do a lot of recruiter training, hiring manager training. In a recession, what happens in our business is there's a big shift away from developing recruiters, spending money on developing recruiters, and a big shift towards hiring manager capabilities. You have smaller recruiting teams, but you still have backfills. You still have a lot of hiring for critical roles that's going to take place. Sales, technology roles might still be growing. So one of the things that we have to look at is how do we make our hiring managers better hiring managers? And I think one of the new angles to look, if you're looking at that problem, a new angle is how do we get really great at virtual interviewing? What does that look like? What's the candidate experience look like? How do we make sure hiring managers know what to do that is different than just an in-person kind of interview? That would be another example of something I've seen our clients kind of pivot towards, is how to get a lot better at that.
Yeah,
I've got a question, John, about how many TA teams are you seeing sort of pivoting towards internal mobility, internal talent brokerage and that kind of thing? Because I've seen it. I've probably had 5 conversations with different TA teams in the last 2 weeks who are doing that.
I think it's a huge focus. My sample size is a little bit limited. So, I mean, it's a little hard. We do work with, hundreds of companies over the course of a few years, but there's a lot of variation, again, based on sector, based on industry. I would say those organizations that are kind of in this hiring pause mode, not full on layoffs, that still have recruiters that are like, what do we do with our recruiting team right now? It is a really obvious low-hanging fruit area to attack, is how do we catalog our internal talent? And I have clients like Sodexo, for example, did a really great job of kind of mapping when you enter our organization at this level, what is your career path? Is it good to bring external talent in here? And then how do they move around? Or is this the kind of role that might be really well fed by an internal talent pool? And how do we do a better job of kind of cataloging and understanding what talent we have available? Workday HRIS has this kind of capability. I talked to a technology vendor yesterday who's actually trying to build on some of the AI they're doing around sourcing to say, can we do something to help profile your existing internal employees and keep those profiles up to date real time? I think that's going to be a really interesting product offering if someone can figure out how to help companies kind of go beyond just what the HRIS kind of, hey, please update your internal profile. Do you speak these languages? What are your interests? What schooling or education or skills do you have that we may not know about? That's great. That's step one. And having recruiters be good at kind of understanding how to kind of drive people to kind of put their information in there, but then actually having a plan around internal mobility. And I would say as a TA function, including me as a TA leader, I spent most of my career on the corporate side trying to get internal mobility off of my plate. Like that's not what recruiting does. We are headhunters. We do external talent, internal talent. That's HR's job. Give that to the HRBP community. I want nothing to do with that. My recruiters aren't even going to be great at that necessarily, because we're not career coaches. We're not here to listen to you tell me about what you want to be in 5 years and help you navigate all the internal bullshit that is kind of, hiring managers that don't want to release you, informational interviews internally. We don't want to chase. It's already hard enough to chase hiring managers for feedback. That thinking that I had in my corporate career has completely shifted now. And if I were a TA leader now, I would be so much more holistic in my thinking. And I would say that's an opportunity for all of us in TA, is to recognize when the business thinks about talent, they don't delineate between external and internal and consultants and all these other things the way that we do. We have kind of organized HR in kind of a weird way, where recruiters primarily focus on external talent and then internal is just kind of left up to the business. and some policy, some process policy program manager that's more on the HR side. That has got to shift, period. Like, recession or not, that has got to shift. But I think the recession might be a forcing function to kind of get us, to kind of force us to get in there and really think about how we can add more value on internal talent, because the business is thinking about it differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But the thing about the, you know, acting as a career counselor or something like that, or a, you know, internal career coach, that's definitely not for recruiters to do. But if you flip that around to looking at it in the context of being a just an internal career like talent broker, that's something that fits in quite nicely. And I've, even well before this, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months ago, I'm seeing companies who are really starting to get rid of that wall between what's my external pipeline and what's my internal pipeline, and really start to think about what's my talent pipeline, whether that's internal, external, contractor, you know, a freelancer, whatever. And we need to know what our options are, no matter where they are in the world, no matter what basis they want to do the job on. Think about scope of work even. So, you know, I agree with you that the thinking on that's changed.
On that note, guys, just very quickly, John, what does a TA leader that listens to all of this, and they're thinking, you know what, that's great, I've got to really pivot in and focus in on this internal mobility piece, but they don't know how to do it. Like, what is the first thing that they need to do? We're talking about retooling as the one of the key terms in our topic. How do they retool their team to do this? They're all externally facing headhunters. Like, what do they need to do to change it or anything? I mean, can they simply be redeployed?
Yeah. So, you know, I always start, you know, the savvy TA leaders recognize HR-driven initiatives are doomed to fail. And what I mean by that, if there's not pull from the business, if there's not a need from the business, you potentially are working on stuff that's going to get scrapped. So I think step one is to figure out what the appetite is for internal talent. And one of the ways to do that is to find, you know, I would go out and survey, and I don't mean send surveys out, but I would go out and kind of figure out where have we had success with internal talent kind of moving into new jobs? Like, what would have been the internal talent feeder pools into certain jobs? And we should start to say, is that something we should kind of make a strategic decision around, that the best way to get outside salespeople is to have them spend 2 years in internal and inside sales first, or something like that. So first, it's kind of do an inventory. What is the business? What has the business already been doing? Where has this already been an appetite around that? And then, like anything you're trying to do before you launch into kind of, you know, the what and the how is the why. Really trying to build a message with your business leaders on why they want to develop internal talent, like what the advantages are. And so if there's anything you can do to kind of measure the ROI of an internal hire relative to an external hire, it might be around tenure, you know, retention, it might be around even saving money. It's often cheaper to move someone internally than to go outside and hire someone and bring them in. Ramp time is often faster. That's one of the big benefits of internal talent. So I'd say build your why story, why it's important, but make sure you bring a strong business lens. If you just simply bring an HR lens, it's the right thing to do. We make this promise in our EVP, you know, guys, we need to take care of our own. Those are all valid reasons to do it, but they don't sound like business reasons to do it. And so find the pull in the business. This is true for university recruiting as well. I've seen TA leaders that come in and say, I led big university programs at my last company. We're going to do university at this company. And they just start going out on campuses and universities and start bringing in interns, and no one wants them. No one's set up. No one is asking for them. And they didn't do the hard work of kind of selling the idea before they launched the work. And so step one for me is always kind of get the why figured out, understand what's already working so you can double down on what's working versus trying to start from scratch and sell this idea. I could keep going on, but does that make sense, kind of what I'm saying there?
It totally makes sense. And I want to just quickly ask another question, because Alicia here has asked a really interesting one. And it's about internal mobility in terms of how you divide the TA function. And Alicia is saying, do you recommend having two TA teams, one focus internal talent and another for external? I think this one applies obviously during this recession mindset right now, but also maybe going forward. Are there two different roles effectively on this? And Adam and John, both of you, I think, have opinions on this. So go see if you've got an answer to that.
I have an opinion on most things, so I'll weigh in on this. I'll tell you my first reaction whenever someone asks me any question around kind of TA organization and roles and specializing, generalizing, centralizing, decentralizing is just simply, what are you optimizing for? What are you optimizing for? And that needs, you need to have a guiding principle before you start saying, is this a good idea, yes or no? because I have seen almost every model you can imagine work in corporate TA if it's aligned to what the business needs. And if you're thinking about, you know, internal mobility specifically, I think one of the questions I would ask is your focus, if your focus is more on how do we identify the internal talent and sort of internally headhunt them, I think having recruiters that are experts at kind of the internal talent place, talent marketplace, that are going to kind of go out and find the talent, engage them, prep them, kind of help them navigate, I think that might make sense to have a specialized role in your TA function. If you look at it through a different lens, optimizing for something else, which is I want to have a true talent advisor recruiter who can sit down with a department head and have a conversation around their you know, hiring strategy for the quarter, I might want to make sure that I, as the recruiter, are leveraging and know how to leverage myself external and internal talent pools. And so I think if you have more of a how do I find the talent internally and source them, I think specialization makes a little more sense. If it's more how do I be a better talent broker, as to use Adam's term, I really like that. I think that is probably more makes the argument for more of the generalist approach, where I think more, you know, holistically about talent, and it's optimized more for those kind of leader level conversations.
Yeah,
fantastic. It depends on the size of your TA team too. I mean, if you're talking about a 5-person team, no, like you should stay generalists. It doesn't make sense to have specialization in that respect. Yeah, sorry.
A few other people in the comments did like the term talent broker as well, but I do have to point out that it doesn't exactly respect the product's position as being humans. So might not be one that catches on within an HR function.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, John, a couple more before we kind of wrap on this. We mentioned sort of, are there any examples of TA teams that you can say, hey, listen, this organization is doing a pretty good job in terms of handling both the virus mindset, recession mindset, and prepping for what the company needs to do in the future? Any of your businesses or customers that sort of strike you as doing a particularly good job there?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. The problem is a lot of it in the last month, again, has been kind of, all right, we're on pause, we're not sure, let's kind of just, you know, keep busy until we know what's going to happen. And so I think a lot of the doing a good job will depend on the next 3-6 months, because a lot of it has been in planning phase. I will say that some of those industries that are growing have been doing a good job and some interesting work to go out and you know, headhunt some of the people that have been impacted by layoffs or downsizings in other organizations. Some people view that as kind of an aggressive tactic, you know, to go after, you know, people that, but they're also reframing it as we're helping these people get jobs. You know, we're helping people that are impacted or about to be impacted to kind of to find a new job, maybe make a career switch. I really appreciate when organizations are not just saying, hey, this competitor is weak, let's go take advantage of that, but are saying, let's find a way to kind of help folks. So for example, in the United States, one of the big retail chains, CVS, which is like, you know, a Boots or something in the UK, one of the things that they did is they partnered with other employers to identify ways to bring hospitality workers that have been just crushed by this. Hotels, travel industry is just a cluster, a total disaster. How can we find ways, since we're growing and they're shrinking? And they actually reached out to Hilton Hotels directly and formed a partnership where they were able to kind of figure out ways to kind of pass talent back and forth. That is brilliant. I mean, that is the kind of stuff, the cooperation that you just probably wouldn't see unless you were kind of forced into this situation. And it gives me hope and humanity when people can kind of be a little more, you know, do it with a caring angle, not just we have a bunch of wrecks to fill, but doing with a real caring angle. That's an example. Yeah.
On that note, I think it was Chuck who actually asked that very question and cited that example. Do you see that as, and just as a follow-up on Chuck's point, he said, do you see that as a singular example, or could it be systematized in some way? I mean, are we going to learn some lessons here about talent sharing, talent distribution that might persist post-COVID, post-recession?
It would make me very happy. My heart would be happy if we saw more cooperation like that. There certainly are lots of examples where organizations, particularly startups, have gotten together and kind of shared, you know, expenses or shared strategies to try and bring talent to, you know, let's say you're trying to create a whole new mini Silicon Valley somewhere and you want to bring talent to the community, and people will come together and rally to try and bring people in. I've seen that kind of stuff happen. And I think that's amazing when employers kind of get together and work on that. I don't know if that's going to be the new normal, but I do know, I think one of the things that feels different to me versus the recessions I've lived through in the past is that this one, there's going to be some industries that thrive. It's not everyone is going down. Some are actually growing considerably. And so I think industries that are shrinking, I actually feel like there's quite a bit of industry on the other side that is growing. It's not going to be equal. There's definitely going to be more shrinkage than growth. But I do think there's a lot of folks on the growing side that are going to probably take advantage of you know, unemployed workers. I think there has traditionally been shame around being unemployed. And I would say most recruiters that work with hiring managers don't want to hire unemployed people. It, you know, there's a lot of messaging that's been baked into our brains over the years that, you know, passive talent is the best talent. You know, it's the ones not looking for a job that are good and all the other people suck. And that is complete bullshit. Quality is quality, whether you're employed or unemployed. I think that is a major message if we're going to collaborate on this and take advantage of kind of opportunities to bring people who have been unemployed or downsized into this. We've got to change that mindset with our hiring managers. I think we are totally effed as an industry during a recession if we can't shift the mindset around that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And one of the features of this type of global problem is that it might help remove the stigma, or at least reduce the stigma of being unemployed, because you know what? A lot of us are in that situation. We might find ourselves there. So by the way, well done on sharing that, Ben. That's fantastic. That's recruiters, hiring recruiters. This is a project, I think, collaborating with Smart Recruiters and a bunch of other communities, which is a fantastic thing that we should all support. Another question for you, John, linked to this. And this is from Carolina, who basically is saying, hey, listen, what should recruiters who are being made redundant right now, what should they be doing in order to either get back in the industry or make sure that they're fully prepared for and equipped to do so when there is some sort of recovery? Do you have any advice for those folks who unfortunately have sort of found themselves in this position?
I think to build on what I said earlier, I think it's really important. This is weird to say it like this. You need to be able to differentiate yourself from the other recruiters. Like one of the ways that you're going to get seen a little more is if you have, you know, a CV and a resume that really highlights the ROI of what you've done. And I would say there's been a lot of recruiters the last 10 years that have been able to plug into fairly large teams. You know, hiring goals for recruiters back when I was, you know, 10 years ago as a head of TA, you know, we goaled our recruiters on 5 to 7 hires a month, depending on the kind of, you know, hires they were making. A lot of organizations right now, it's 1 to 2 per month. And I think, that's a whole other conversation, but I do think showing on, you know, standing out by talking about the actual hires you're making, not just the projects you worked on, but as a way to kind of get back into a company that is in hiring mode, they're going to want to be very selective. You know, when you have limited headcount available to add to your recruiting team, you're going to want to be very, very selective and make sure you hire kind of high producers in there. So things that are demonstrating that. And then, you know, similarly, I think people are going to get a little more picky. And so being smarter around the technologies you've used, I think this is a ridiculously stupid thing, but I had a TA leader tell me they only wanted to hire recruiters that had experience with a particular applicant tracking system. That was one of the key words. We just don't have time to teach. If you don't know, you know, JobVite or Smart Recruiters or whatever, we just don't.
And I Taleo, just, whatever. Please tell me it was Taleo.
God almighty, I just want to kick him in the, you know, that is so stupid to suggest that a new recruiter can't learn up a new kind of technology really quick. I mean, ATSs are not that different, right? But I would say, having said all that, there are going to be some people that are going to say, what's the fastest ramp time? If I'm going to bring Hung in as a new recruiter, how do I want to get people that are going to ramp up quickly. So it would be a good idea for you to be thinking about how familiar you are with some of the tools that maybe some companies have implemented. So do your research on their career site, see what ATS they're using, see what CRM they're using, figure out what their Twitter presence is, you know, what technologies they might be investing in, and see if you can somehow make yourself kind of more attractive. I'm not talking about lying on your resume, but see if you can kind of get exposure to some of those things so you appear like a very kind of quick to ramp recruiter. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I think that's great advice. Quick to ramp. That is something that an out of work or redundant recruiter right now needs to really think about. And by the way, I think a lot of these ATSs that are out there have offered what look like free certifications or free training on their product. Like they want recruiters to use these things. So go and take those courses. You know, if you've not used it or implemented it, go and check out their website.
Learn it. Exactly.
Stuff
yeah,
learn it, and then you can go in there, and there will be recruiters who, I think it sounds ridiculous, but I totally get the hiring manager in that particular instance, because it is like, there's already a surfeit of these candidates. If I'm going to cut 100 down to 10, how am I going to do that? I'm going to say, right, I need everyone who knows this product. Right. Classic case of a reversed market there.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're coming to the end of the show here, John. I just wanted to leave you with a final opportunity to say a final piece, I guess. Where do you think we're at right now? Where do you think TA needs to go? What do individual recruiters need to be doing in the next 12 months, let's say, to best securitize their careers and their way forward?
I think this is, as I said this earlier, you know, before, during, and after this, making yourself more valuable is critical. I think that, you know, showing that you are a high ROI individual who focuses on critical path work and delivers real value to the business, I think is more important than ever. I would say, you know, just in a very tactical example to wrap up and build on what we just said, one of the ways that I know when I look at a recruiter profile on LinkedIn, I'm always looking, do they have hiring manager recommendations? Not just do their buddies say nice things about them. So if you're in a downturn, you're not working or you're not working as much as you'd like, take advantage of the fact to really go out and kind of build your recommendation library on LinkedIn, get some of those, you know, VPs and directors that you supported to talk about what an amazing recruiter you are. A lot of recruiters don't have enough hiring manager recommendations on their LinkedIn profiles, and it is a signal. It's not proof, but it's a signal that I think we're going to be looking for. And then the other thing is just, you know, what we talked about already. I think we need to get a lot smarter around internal mobility. I think diversity is going to continue to be a big focus area. Make sure you're educated on that and have a point of view. Make sure you're really better at middle of funnel than maybe you have been in the past. I think there's not nearly enough focus in our industry on kind of interviewing capabilities. It's all top of funnel, top of funnel, top of funnel. And I think we need to get a lot better at that, particularly now. And then just generally, you know, keep your head up. I mean, this is going to suck for some people for sure. I hope this is a great time to kind of retool, make yourself even more valuable. I saw in one of the recessions, recruiters had to pivot into sales roles, real estate roles. You know, they tried to find some other areas to go to for a while to get better or to just to kind of feed their families, and then were able to come back. Some never came back. Some liked it better on the outside. I love recruiting. It's been my, you know, my life's work, and I'm very, very happy to be in this profession. And I'm very excited to do our part to kind of help companies as much as possible. We put a post, LinkedIn featured on their talent blog, some free training and development that our team recommended. I see a few folks from my team are on here. Matt and Ben and my team and I each identified a free thing you can do to kind of a video to watch. You can read Glenn Cathy talk about pipelining, a couple other things. I would encourage you just to kind of stay focused on your own development, get curious, stay curious. And that's all part of making yourself more valuable. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And on that note, I think we've got to come to the end of this show. So Adam, you want to say one more thing?
Listen, recession or not, we need to bear in mind that as a profession, talent acquisition is basically at the scale-up phase. Most organizations still don't have talent acquisition teams. A lot of them are going to be looking this year. A lot of businesses are going to be looking at how do we do recruitment better. They're going to be building in-house teams that they haven't done yet. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. Our profession is going to grow.
Great stuff, Adam. And I think that's the key message. We've seen some amazing sort of support within the community as well. So please make yourself, I think one of the best things recruiters can do right now is actually just connect with other recruiters also. Avail yourself to the community, be a member of it, be active in there, and get all of the information from those folks and connect with people like John and Adam as well. Okay. That's about it, everyone. We're going to be back next week with another Brain Food Live. Final shout out. Thank you to Pass Technologies, our sponsors for today. Next week, we are going to be talking about communities, why recruitment communities in particular should be part of your strategy now in terms of your business, your branding, and also your personal career. So make sure you follow the channel. We'll see you next Friday. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you, Ong. Thank you, Adam. Thanks, everyone. Bye, guys.
Oh, by the way, the people who are still watching this, you can follow the channel and watch this on replay as well. So if you needed to do that, you can do that also. Anyway, I'm checking out. See you next Friday.